Welcome back to Inside the 18, live from United Soccer Coaches Convention in lovely Baltimore, Maryland. I wonder if that's the first time anyone said lovely Baltimore, Maryland before, but it's been amazing for us so far. I'm Michael Magid. With me is Pro GK Academy's Omar Zini. And joining us for the first time, I'm pretty sure, NYCFC's Goalkeeping Academy Director, Danny Sapero. Danny, what's up, man?
Hey, Michael. Omar, how are you guys?
Good to be here. Very good, yeah.
We're stoked to have you here, man, because first off, for the audience out there that's listening to this and watching this, Danny had been sitting out there for like 20 minutes.
No, it wasn't that long.
Okay. A little bit of time. We were like, because we were doing like another session beforehand. I just said session. We were doing another episode beforehand. It felt like a session.
Yeah.
So, because we were talking to a goalkeeper coach, and I kind of felt the same way when I've got like, you know, the kids showing up for your new session and you're finishing up at the end with your other session and you're like, all right, guys, 20 volleys. Let's get these 20 volleys in right now because like so-and-so, you guys start warming up. Why don't you guys just start warming up right there? Service each other, distribution on the ground, feet. We're going to do feet right there because I wanted you to do something. I felt bad. You were, like, sitting there, you know, like, on your phone.
No, it was good. I was catching up on the news and catching up on email. So
we're going to war soon. So.
Yeah, there's a lot happening. So there's a lot to catch up on outside of the soccer world.
Well, speaking of catching up, thank you for everybody who's been catching up on the podcast, listening, rating, reviewing, and subscribing. We're getting absolutely – it's amazing how many reviews. Omar did it the last time. Since this episode literally has been done right next, I don't think we've got more reviews in the last hour.
We have not, no.
Okay, well, Omar's like, I'm pretty sure we haven't. I mean, I haven't checked yet, but I'm sure we have not gotten any new reviews. 130 reviews domestic, 135 worldwide, which I believe makes 265.
Where'd you get the six from?
I don't know,
carrying
dude.
The one over.
So this is why kids stay in school. Stay in school because you're going to do a much better job than me. Guys, keep rating, reviewing, and subscribing on all platforms. Make sure you're leaving your Instagram or Twitter handle in the body so we can send you your prize. A lot of you leave your Apple Podcast sign-in. This happens all the time. Dude, literally we had somebody read Goalkeeping from Afar. I'm like, I don't know who that is. Literally have no idea who this could be. But we want to send you your prize, and we can't do that. So make sure you're sending Twitter handle, Instagram handle. Those are the best ways. This is also how people find us. The more reviews, the more goalkeepers we reach, the more stories we can share and learn from one another. So what we want to do right now is we want to start with a listener review because, like I was telling Jeremy earlier, I'm narcissistic, and I want people to talk about how much they love me. Hopefully somebody will mention Omar, too, at some point. Awesome podcast, ! 5 stars. Love listening to the show with my dad on our drives to and from practice. My favorites have been with Todd Hofford and Big Cat. Well, now Danny Sapero is going to be up there, too. Keep up the great work. And this is from Fish, who is Colby Sessions via Apple Podcasts. So thank you, Colby, for that. That's actually, I know Colby. I think he's out of Utah. I think that might be one of the reasons why he
thanks
loves Todd.
Todd
Hofford. Yeah, yeah, that's why I think Todd right there. Also, guys, if you want to be an insider of the week, you have to leave a review. You can't go into the submissions unless you've left a review. The Insider of the Week, for the guys who are not familiar, is a new program we've started where every week we're choosing a new insider, which is our fans, and we're going to be featuring them on the podcast. We're on the social media, videos, all that sort of stuff. Again, guys, you have to be over 18 or get your parents' consent. Submit to contact at insidethe18media.com, and you must have a written review, like I was saying, order to be eligible. Clearly, I'm just reading copy, guys. That's how this goes. All right, guys, let's just get into today's episode. Actually, you know what? We actually have a question from an audience member who's not in here right now, and this comes from John Hollinger, who was actually just playing over in Sweden. And his question is for Danny, actually, and he wants to know how high is the integration level between NYCFC and the other city football group academies? And this is actually a really good question because I think it's going to kind of lead into our topic for the episode. So I'm not going to answer it because I think Danny is probably the best person to answer this since he's the one at the NYCFC. So.
Yeah, I think we're fortunate that we have this partnership, this relationship amongst a number of different clubs around the world through City Football Group. It's still in its infancy for us from the academy level. City Football Group, Manchester City is the most notable club under their umbrella, and we take a lot of the lead from them. But they've given us a ton of freedom to develop our philosophy as an academy, myself, goalkeeping philosophy. They've given me tons of freedom to do that. And so we're starting to create and forge our identity that then will hopefully open up more of a dialogue with CFG, teams like Manchester City and Melbourne in Australia, of sharing ideas. We're already in the process of sharing actual employees and people and then coaches, and you can see that with the first team staff. And I think one of the new initiatives for us this coming season and in the year to come is actually spending time in places like Manchester, hopefully places like Melbourne.
I love how you just said that. You're like, oh, hopefully you mentioned, but Melbourne,
maybe,
though.
Maybe not quite right now as they're dealing with those wildfires, but nevertheless, the idea sharing in that platform exists, and it's something that is still in its infancy, like I said. So we're getting there. It's not quite as fluid, I think, as maybe some people might think. But that's because, as Michael, you and I were talking about, I think they're cognizant and wanting of us to forge an American MLS identity.
Yeah.
And use that to kind of guide us rather than just dictating from afar. So that's where we're at.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. You know, Omar and I, we were talking about this earlier in regards to academies, and we were talking with Jeremy, too, about academies in regards to, you want to make sure that there's a culture, but that you're not just trying to copy somebody else, that you're developing your own actual culture, because everyone's going to be different. Every goalkeeper is going to be different. Every city in regards to how their youth programs are developed is going to be different. So with the affiliate clubs, it's going to be a different relationship than let's say how Melbourne does it, for instance. So let's kind of just get into City Football Group and explain it to some of our audience right here. Our parents, and they might not be familiar. They go, "Man City, that's the one with David De Gea, right?" I'm like, that's the wrong club right there. So let's talk about the City Football Group style of play, because there's a specific style of play. From what I can gather as a layman, is a very possession style of play. But why don't you go a little bit more into it?
Yeah, I mean, for City Football Group, I think, to be clear, like for me, like NYCFC Academy is who I'm speaking for. Like the CFG umbrella kind of has their own thing, and it's much bigger than just the football side of things. For us as an academy, we try and follow in line with what you're saying, a very possession-based, build from the back style of play that's exciting, that's dynamic, tons of player movement, interchanging positions, but also creative and unique in how forceful we are when we attack, which as from a goalkeeping perspective is sometimes shifts the way that you have to think as a coach and as a development influencer of these players. But I think that's really where it stands, is it's building out from the back, which doesn't always mean short passes, but finding the best pass to build and unbalance your opponent and then score goals and do that in a creative and dynamic way.
That's really a good point that you brought up, that it's not just about short passes, because I think a lot of youth coaches out there, and I want a lot of coaches out there to listen to this, is that building out of the back doesn't necessarily mean 17 balls back and forth between the center back and the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Omar, how many times have you seen goalkeepers of yours that you've been training, and they say, "Oh, my team, we play build out of the back." And you watch the video and you're like, "You're not building out of the back, dude. You're just guys are just playing keep away." Like,
yeah, I think I remember last year we went to Arizona, and I was watching some of the MLS guys doing their warm-up. Mm-hmm. And I think it was from FC Dallas that Jimmy Maurer was doing a warm-up, and he did like a pass back where he played the ball to his left back or his left center back on the edge of the 18, got a pass back, and one-touch clearance it up. And I was just like, wow, there's so many different ways to obviously like simulate, like you said, at the academy level. It's like, yes, getting your touch right, getting comfortable hitting the one-touch pass, getting comfortable hitting a one-touch clearance, and then directing that clearance to a certain pocket that you want to try and find.
Sure.
I think that's the ability now where you kind of put those in the sessions, you kind of, yeah, put it in a controlled setting and say, look, this is what we're going to work on today. And I think that's where the game is going now. It's like, can you play inside the 18 now? Yes, you're inside the box. Okay, now can we play keep away inside the 18? I think that's why Sean Johnson's kind of found like a second coming in his career, because he's gotten better with his feet. And I think the system of play has really taken it out of him, or really, forced his hand to either get with it or get lost. I think he's gotten with it, and he's becoming not just a physical specimen, but now he's actually thinking more with his feet, which I love.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think Sean is one of the best examples of what a goalkeeper can become within this style of play, within this system. And I keep coming back to the word purposeful. It's possession with a purpose. And you hear that quite a bit, but it's the purpose of scoring goals. Yeah. You know, that's why we're doing it. We're trying to attract the opponent into our half, unbalance them, and then break those lines to get dynamic in the attack and score lots of goals. And that's sometimes lost in what we're doing. And Sean has figured out, and like you said, I think has had a renaissance of sorts of being able to play out from the back and solve problems and doing it in a way that tactically makes sense, not just to keep it.
For sure. Yes. Him and like Brad Guzan too. Like Brad, I've been watching a lot of his stuff lately, and you just see this guy's goal kicks are, okay, they're showing high pressure. He's bypassing the high pressure. Mm-hmm. Or they're dropping off. He's playing short. And, again, the renaissance of his career too. You're just watching like, wow, okay, a guy that you did not think that was going to be very good with his feet, or you know that the game, the new generation, new era would kind of like phase him out. He said, you know what? No, I'm going to step up to the challenge, and I'm sure he's doing that every single day in training. So, like for you, though, with your coaching style, do you feel like you're stepping into more of the field sessions a little bit more, the coaching room with the coaches, and say, hey, like, tell me exactly what you need from my goalkeepers, and then I'm going to try and, you know, simulate it in training? Is that kind of how the
it's an ongoing process, because for me, working with six different coaches, because we have six age groups, so U19, U16s, and 17s are one group as well. So you got U19s, U17s, U15s, U14s, U13s, U12s.
Jeez.
And each of those obviously have their own coach. You're playing under the same style of play. But
are you the only keeper coach for the academy, by the way?
Currently, yes. Okay. We're in the process of hiring an assistant to work with the younger three age groups, while I would be focusing primarily on the older age groups. But we haven't finalized anything yet. So
you're just looking for somebody else to tie shoes, is what you're
trying. Okay, somebody to help do these things, because it is it's an intricate process. That's something that, for me, coming from college to now look at what it's like building from the back. And for the younger kids, for them, it's a lot shorter passes because they need to get a little bit more confident technically, tactically reading presses and finding out where are the pockets of space where I can find guys on my team to pass the ball to.
Yep.
As they get older, to your point about Sean, is now recognizing not just these short passes, but sometimes medium length passes, sometimes longer passes to bypass pressure. We play teams like Jeremy, who was on the podcast. We play Red Bulls, of looking to make smart passes and find your 7.
We'll talk about
11.
That rivalry right
there.
Yeah,
so making the best passes to solve problems, I think, is now where you're getting older kids trying to figure that out. And that's utilizing a different range of passing, not just these short to medium passes.
I want to talk about this real quickly. I just want to go off on this tangent because you brought it up, basically. But that rivalry, that Red Bull NYCFC, do people kind of feel like you're on the other side now, you know, being at NYCFC?
Maybe. I've heard it when people who aren't really familiar be like, wait, so you played for one team, but now you're coaching for this other team? So it happens more frequently, I think, than I expected. I think my parents sometimes, when I first took the gig, they were like, wait, so you're going to, why not with Red Bulls? And I'm like, Mom, it doesn't really work like that. Like, they just, you know, like, they offer the position. So I think it's a bigger deal for the fans than it is for us as coaches. Not to say that it doesn't bleed into a rivalry of red versus blue, of Red Bulls versus NYCFC. So I think the irony underlying all of this is that, like, the coaches are all pretty close and congenial with each other. Like, I'm friends with Jeremy, and he's the other sideline. And the players almost always came from the same clubs.
Oh, you know, yeah. So I'm like, sure they've all from the same area,
they're
right?
They're all boys, yeah. So after the game, it's really fun. Like, super competitive on the field, and then off the field, they're, like, texting and watching YouTube videos together on the field. You know, like, it's really, really funny.
Do you find supporter culture – we're totally going off the rails right here, but whatever. There's a rundown, and it's here. Anyway. But supporter culture, I feel like us as coaches, we find supporter culture so foreign to us because – you know, we actually, as educators, we work with other people, and as players, you know, we move from team to team. But supporters, a lot of times, it's their loyalty is almost like it's their loyalty to a brand, almost like people who are like, I refuse to wear anything but Under Armour, or I'm wearing Under Armour right now. I gave them an ad read for no reason. You guys are going to pay for that Under Armour. I'm going to that booth at the exhibit hall, and I'm going to hand them my card, and I'm going to say, hey, guys, you guys owe us $500 for that. Okay. But no, I mean, you know, do you think sometimes, like, with supporter culture, like, they kind of don't get it where we're coming from?
It's an interesting take. I think what they do is really special, and I think there is a lot to to the value of their brand loyalty, because some of these fans show up at our Academy games, and that's
no way.
It's wild. Yeah, even there were a handful of them.
Okay, I'm not bad mouthing the Academy the supporters in any way whatsoever. They terrify me also. Like third rail, they terrify me. Third rail terrifies me.
I think for us as coaches, it's important to be cognizant of where they're coming from and how much they support and how much they give for the badge, so to speak, and trying to keep that in the back of our minds, I think, is huge, regardless of whether it's the Academy level or at the first team level. So while it may seem foreign to me sometimes because, I work at the club, and that can always change. I think being in this industry, you realize, and Omar and I were talking about it, that you can change allegiances sometimes because of factors that aren't necessarily in your control. And the same happens with players. You get traded, you get released, you find new opportunities and can find new chances to restart your career when you talk about Sean. So I think it's important to find a balance between that for us as coaches to stay loyal to those fans that are staying loyal to us.
All right, well, Omar's still wearing his LA Galaxy boxers, so we're doing good.
It's
going
to be very hard for me to switch over. Like, if I ever got a job with LAFC, it'd be very difficult. I'd probably just show up to work, put my head down, and then, like, leave. And then I'm just a big Galaxy fan. And
well, you played in the system, dude. You've grown up. You literally grew up in the system.
True.
You know?
It's just, and the fans are just crazy. They're just very very rowdy. And it's just, when as a fan, I go to the games, and I'm just like, I can never imagine how I could ever somehow put in the gold and black, whatever the colors
black
are.
And black and gold.
Black
dude.
And gold.
You'd never be 3-2-5-2? Is that what you're saying?
No.
All right, let's get back to goalkeeping because we went off for 20 minutes. But that's okay. We need to. How do you develop goalkeepers to fit this possession style, Danny?
I think the first part is scouting and what we look for in goalkeepers. Part of my presentation, part of the reason I'm here is to help illuminate what we look for at NYCFC for as far as goalkeepers from a young age, from 10, 11 years old. And part of that is their ability to pass the soccer ball. You know, do they have the technical acumen to make some of the passes that we're going to ask of them? I think it's important to note, however, that the bigger things for me are their brains, their presence, which I talk a decent amount of in these presentations, but and also just like their understanding of the game at a relatively basic level of like, how do I find open pockets of space for me to pass it to this kid who's wearing the same shirt I am, at a very basic level. So when we look at it,
that's a good idea to pass it to the kid wearing the same shirt.
I think sometimes we overthink it, for them at the youngest ages, when it comes to that. And then really it's just trying to find the best player on my team to pass to, instead of like having to like do a million different things. So when we're developing at the youngest ages, I spend more of my time in the build-up phase than as they progress older, and probably more than I think some other clubs around the country. When you look at it, if you were like to pie chart it, I spend a third of my time on the training field with the younger age groups on build-up alone. So that's a huge component. It's not the only thing we work on, and it shouldn't be the only thing that we work on, but usually that's the most, it's the steepest hill to climb, so to speak, for young goalkeepers.
You know, one thing I always see, and Omar and I, we've talked about this. We've talked about the fact that a lot of goalkeeper coaches out there, they try to incorporate too much into their sessions, especially with the youngers, as opposed to trying to keep it simple. Like you're talking about, you know, pattern play, build up play, that sort of thing. You know, one specific topic. Once they have a grasp of that, it's not like you're never going back there or whatever. Then you can move on to another activity and for a different session. But when you're trying to do 17 different things in one session, especially at the youngers, their brains just explode.
Yeah, there's no way for a kid. I mean, if we can remember back to when we were kids, if somebody were doing that with us, like, you're only going to pick up one or two things. And especially like under the pressure, whether it's from parents or themselves or their coaches or their teammates that the kids are dealing with these days, like, there's no way they're going to retain all that information. So one of the biggest challenges for me of switching from college into the Academy system was trying to create like a syllabus, a way to simplify what can sometimes be in our brains a complex game. When in reality, it can be much simpler. And I think that's one of the hardest things to do. And it's something that I'm continuing to grow at, is how do you take these ideas and break them down to their simplest form so that the kids can take them and build on them on their own.
Amen. I think that's the biggest thing, especially for any coach getting into like the youth game first, because I think that allows you to process kind of your methodology a little bit more and kind of dissect it to like the basic terms. So then now you're able to take it to the pro guys, and let's say they had an off day or something like that. Let's get back to the basics here, and then from there you have the ability and stuff to draw off of and say, okay, let's work on the weight of the pads. Let's work on specific showing at different angles, things like that. So it's just kind of like making sure you have that foundation of information so that when you step to the next level, you have the ability to kind of break it down for them if, let's say, they have an off day or they're kind of like in their own head in a sense.
So let's talk about identifying an NYCFC Academy goalkeeper. You were talking about that's why actually your topic is going to be at the session tomorrow is the identification process. What is the DNA you're looking for? Are you looking for, hey, that number 10, you know, he passed like 17 times. Let's put some gloves on that person and make them a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I look for is presence, which some people call personality. And presence has been something, I think, an elusive term to define. Like, what is presence? And I've tried to simplify what that looks like into certain components, things like energy. What do they feel like? Are they happy to be in goal? Do they seem to be joyful about playing this position that can sometimes be lonely, pressure-filled, intense, unforgiving? And are they embracing that? And that energy, I think you can tell right away when you get to a field. From that, I think bravery of this willingness to put your body on the line at a young age is rare. And when it shows in combination with energy, that gets me excited for a potential goalkeeper with whom I can work. And then resilience. So that's part of the bravery is like you're willing to make mistakes, but then you can recover from the mistakes and still have that energy, that joy that we were talking about before. And now it's like in this like self-fulfilling cycle of awesomeness that when you get to a field, you're like, this kid is special. And I can then teach him things about buildup. I can then teach him tactical ways to deal with crosses or through balls because they have those starting points. So those for me are like a huge thing. And then the next biggest thing is athleticism. Are they in control of their bodies? Can they change direction? Are they explosive? Can they accelerate, decelerate, set, dive? When I go to a field, those two things, presence and athleticism, are the ones that I'm looking for the most.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up those two points, and I'm glad that you brought up the mental aspect first before you brought up the physical traits, because there's a lot of great athletes out there who mentally they don't have that kind of strength. You know, I've seen it out there at times. I had a kid who I thought had all the things. I mean, his brother was 6'7", he was a professional hockey player, and I was like, dude, this kid's going to be the man at like 8 years old and stuff like that. And after like 3 sessions, the kid was just like, you keep scoring on me, you keep scoring on me. And I'm like, dude, this goals are going to go in. That is part of soccer. Like the whole point of the game is to score goals. So like they're gonna go in. And like if you can't deal with this at 8 years old, and sure enough, the kid did not decide to go on, despite the fact that he had literally all the physical tools. It was one of those situations where you're just like really sad. You're like, man, if only this kid could just have that maturity, you know. So you know, Omar had all those tools at 10. So
no, I think the importance of playing different sports. I think that's like a huge thing too. Is like I think that's you learn so much about. Talk about all the time, like basketball, and how you defend in basketball is the reason why you get low for making movements when you play defense, is because it makes sense. And like how goalkeeping is very similar to that, and kind of like reading passes, reading passing lanes, and making decisions when you're on the ball, finding the right pass. So it's just like a lot of the similarities that you see in different sports. And I personally like when kids play different sports, just because I know what it did for me. And I think that it's important. And I don't think, like you said, it's like if you play different sports, it shows your willingness to be athletic and like willingness to try different things, and you have as much different tools you can, you know, call on. Sorry, I'm so out of it from the last podcast. I'm already tired, dude. I've already hit my
ceiling. No, those are good points. I think the multiple sport aspect is, like, I couldn't agree more. I'm sure Jeremy, I hope he was talking about that, because we spent a lot of time talking about this, because there's so many similarities athletically among the sports.
Yeah.
Things like tennis, basketball was a big one for me, but just hand-eye coordination. But for me, it's going back to that presence of like when you're playing sports as a kid, different sports, learning new rules, playing with different kids, managing those kids. I remember playing basketball and like trying to dictate like where this guy goes, and like you got to stop him from scoring because he's killing us.
Yeah.
And that's what you do as a goalkeeper, you know.
Sure.
So whether you're managing your own brain or whether you're managing the people around you in different ways, in different environments, and with different rules, you start to figure it out. And I think that's one of the benefits when you see like a lot of people talking and espousing the ideals of like just playing pickup, anything. Yeah. Because it brings out a lot of that for goalkeepers is hugely important.
Do you feel that enough goalkeepers don't play pickup?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think, in my experience, that goalkeepers don't play enough sports at young ages, different sports. And part of that is, look, like they want to specialize and they love the game of soccer, so fair play. But anytime I've seen goalkeepers that have started out that way and then like discover like what a basketball looks like and how to play, they're just like, I'm better at crosses now because like I've been playing basketball at school, like with no rules, with no uniforms, just like at recess. And I'm like, yeah, man, like, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, have fun. Yeah. Do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at that. I mean, I think basketball helped me as a goalkeeper tremendously. You know, yes, I know people are laughing already, literally watching this video when I just said basketball helped me as a goalkeeper. They're like, "How tall are you again?" But no, it helped me because of boxing out and rebounding and how to keep my body, you know, behind the ball and being able to go up vertically and be able to hold on to the ball and those sorts of things. You know, that a lot of goalkeepers, you know, who. I think there was a whole thing that was done a few years back where they had a, you know, one of those ICC tours.
Sure.
When all the top class players come here, you know, that sort of thing. You know, like you're the parent club, you know, like when they come here.
Yeah.
And like they have them like throw a football or throw a baseball and like literally it's the most hilarious thing in the world because they've literally, their body doesn't have that neuromuscular response. There's no muscle memory to how to make that movement because they've never done it before, yeah. Type of a thing. I think for goalkeepers, cross training is so important because of all the movements that we do are incorporated into so many different sports. I think one of the reasons Omar was such a great goalkeeper is because of all the basketball he played, you know, yeah, like specifically.
For sure. And I think you said, I didn't even think about that. That's the beauty of like talking to different people is they all have like different approaches to it. And like even you said, like it's kind of like being a field general when you're on the court. And that's when a lot of your personality comes out. Like I know a lot of people who are very reserved and like kind of reclusive when they go off the field. And then when they step on, it's like home for them. And those are the kind of guys too when I'm like, a coach one time told me like, Omar, you're too nice. You're too nice of a guy, and I just don't feel like when we get on the field, you'll get upset about certain things, and I need a goalkeeper who's a presence out there. I went to the rival school. I went to Davis. It was a coach at Irvine at the time, and he, like, pulled me aside one day. He's like, oh, like, I didn't know that this was, like, how you played. I'm like, well, just come to my games. You'll see, like, I step out of my comfort zone when I'm in this environment because I'm so comfortable speaking out and, like, making certain decisions because of that trial and error over the years of playing those different sports and being able to kind of understand the right terminology to use to certain people. And those are the personalities. You're a business owner back there. Like, you're managing personalities. And, like, especially, too, that's why we're so good as, like, goalkeeper coaches is because we're able to manage different personalities that we train with. We know that some kids need a little bit more push. Some kids need a little less push. Some kids need a little bit more of, like, technical foundation. Some people need more tactical stuff. So it's the ability to kind of, like, observe that and then quickly be able to find a plan to make that kind of like kind of all come to fruition. So
yeah. Danny, did you play any other sports?
Yeah, I played a ton of other sports. Basketball was my number one sport growing up. I played all through high school.
I could literally see you as a varsity high school
I was a point guard.
Yeah.
And I played growing up, and all the points Omar is making, I completely agree. I feel like we were the same person growing up. So like I was super quiet, very reserved in the classroom. Like when I would go over play dates, like the parents of my friends would be like, are you okay? Like you're not saying anything. And then when I got on the field or on the court, I had like a chip on my shoulder, you know, and I was barking orders and I was organizing and problem solving. And I think one of the things I miss about a sport like basketball, relative to soccer, is that like you play offense and defense.
Yeah.
You know, like, so like if I turn the ball over as a point guard, I can win it back as a defender, and as a goalkeeper, you don't get that opportunity necessarily. No. You get lit up or you make a big mistake, like it may be minutes before you do anything of note in that game.
Yeah.
And I think what was awesome about those other sports, I played basketball, I played tennis, which is a whole nother animal.
Dude, that's the hardest sport. I tried it. It's so hard. It's so exhausting.
But even when we look at tennis, sorry to cut you up, but like, when you look at tennis, like I tweeted it when I was watching the Wimbledon final. I think it was Federer versus Nadal. And there was a time where I'm like, just watch when Nadal's about to serve and how Federer's like prep set is and how he sets up for this to return the serve. And it's just like he makes sure he's set, and it's like we're doing goalkeeping. We make sure we're set so that access, it opens up like the lateral movement. And once you have the lateral movement, you can get your body behind the ball. And that's how – so it's like there's so many similarities. Yeah. And I don't think enough kids understand that.
Yeah, if you watch Federer's footwork, it's magical. He's like a dancer. And
masterclass.
It's amazing footwork. And a lot of people like his shot selection and all that. But like his footwork, it looks like he's barely moving and he's gliding. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. I think like tennis – basketball, those sports, also like you have to have a short memory. So like you mess up and you get over it. And I think that helped me as a goalkeeper because I had that outlet that in soccer as a goalkeeper, when you make a mistake, like we were talking about, like you may not be able to make up for that for a while.
Yeah.
And that's tough.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing that all the time, then you're constantly living with this like guilt or like shame or anger or whatever, these emotions of like, I just got scored on to that 8-year-old that you were talking about.
Yeah.
That in another sport, you've learned how to cope with that and be like, all right, like I've got to get on with Absolutely. It because there's another play. And in goalkeeping, as we know, at the highest levels, there is always something to do, whether you're actually catching the ball or directing the guys in front of you. So the quicker you get over it, the better.
I'm not going to lie. Like one of the hardest things for me to do, and you're bringing that up, is as a goalkeeper to understand that when you give up a goal, because there's no physical, tangible way for you to make up for that without another, lack of a better term, mistake happening in order for you to be able to, you know, make up for your prior mistake or whatever. You can't physically, I guess you could be Jorge Campos or Chilavert or something like that and, like, go up the field and score a goal, but most likely you're not going to score a goal. So you kind of have to let the game play in your head and let things play out again as they are and just try to do better the next time, which was the most difficult thing for me personally.
I think that's like the one thing too I've talked about it on my channel a lot, is like the fact that at times it seemed to me like De Gea is the kind of guy who he needs shot stopping to kind of get his confidence up. Mm-hmm. And I tell myself, like, growing up, I realized that my coach told me, he's like, Omar, you're not going to get shots every game. So find a way to get confident in the game, whether it's how you hit a goal kick. If you want to find a certain channel, find that confidence from there, or coming out for a cross or doing certain things. And I think early in my career, I got to a point where I was like, okay, when I get my first goal kick, when I get this pass back, that's going to give me confidence. And it did. And I was like, being able to instill that from like the beginning, where you don't have to chase the game, it kind of comes to you. And I'm sure that's how your goalies are in NYCFC. It's just kind of like you have to be switched on the entire game. So I think those guys are probably playing more kind of basketball like minded stuff, because they're asking to play with the ball out of the back and to kind of be the quarterback back there. And I think it triggers something in the brain to always be switched on, which I think sometimes other teams that don't play out of the back, it's very difficult for their goalkeepers to have confidence in anything other than shot stopping, cross taking, stuff that doesn't happen as often.
How difficult was it, the transition from college to the academy? Because it's a very different style of play.
Yeah, 100%. It was a challenge. And I had started to prepare. The biggest one was just the number of passes and that philosophy of building up, because NYCFC is a little bit unique in that, in how much priority we put on the build up from the goalkeeper, and trying to think of new and innovative ways to train that, to make it exciting, because
mundane a little bit.
Yeah, you don't always have a ton of space to like drill 50-yard balls. I wish we did, but you're in it usually.
What, in the greater New York metro area? There's not a lot of space. It's blown away.
Until we start building fields on top of skyscrapers, like in Japan, I think.
Are they doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No way. That's sick.
So when we're fighting for space and trying to make that exciting and something that resonates, especially with the young ones, you're trying to balance that out with the fun aspect of what they love is shot stopping and cross taking. That has one of the biggest challenges, because we did very little build up in college, training wise. So it was just very basic, like, okay, this is what happens when a ball comes back. You're probably going to hoof it, or you're just going to find your center back who's not being pressed. There aren't these, like, they're pressing with three and I've got to figure out where to find the six, like none of that. So I've had to like use my brain to break it down and try and recreate those situations. But it's made me a better coach.
Do you feel like the college game, and Omar obviously he was coaching at the college game as well too, and I spent a little bit of time in the college game, for lack of a better term, not all the clubs, you know, not all the teams, but a lot of the teams that you play out there, their style is so direct that it actually disallows you to play in such a manner, so you have to kind of counter with that same type of direct activity in order to be able to counterbalance what they're doing.
Absolutely. I think that was one of the biggest challenges we had at Louisville was what do we do with teams that are direct? And I think we, in the ACC, most of those teams build and play, and so like it's a like for like. So it's relatively, not easy, but you have a better way to stay true to your identity as a team to win games. In college, I think there's such a priority on winning that you have to figure out how to adapt and mold your team to figure out how to win, which I think you do at any level, but in college, because there are less games and it's more compressed, it's a bigger challenge. And I think sometimes you then have to kind of like say, okay, like we're not going to be wedded to these ideals and playing styles and have to adapt to this circumstance.
Do you think that's actually one of the reasons, and apologize for going off on another tangent here, but I think it's fascinating. I think some of our coaches out there who want to either coach at the college game or working at the youth club and trying to get kids to the college level, do you think it's because of the lack of time? Omar, you know about this the lack of time you're allowed with the players creates kind of these game environments that are so direct and so rough and tumble, because you don't have that time to build a patterns of play. It's not a year-long club system where you can do that. You got these kids for 3 months.
Yeah, it's an art, not a science, and it takes a long time. I mean, look at the best teams in the world at it and how they've had to acquire players to do it, and it's taken years to do that. I mean, Man City is a good example. It took them a while to figure out the right guys in certain positions, because if one guy's off, the whole team is off. And I think in college there's a wider range of skill across your 11. So if one or two of those guys are maybe a little iffy on the ball, it makes it not worth doing, because you don't have the time to develop and you don't have the season. I mean, you're playing 16, 17 games. You don't have 30 or 40 of them to kind of as a margin for error.
So you just see that dude and you're like, dude, just bypass that guy. Don't even touch. That guy literally just runs for 90 minutes. Like, he doesn't even touch the ball.
Yeah, but that's what it comes down to, I think, in terms of like the goalkeepers that you recruit. And I think especially at the next level, like Sean Johnson probably would have been out at New York City if he didn't define or like change his game up a little bit, because they're going to find somebody who can just seamlessly move in. And I think that's where, even in college, like our coaching staff, we had a goalkeeper who was really good with his feet. He's from Denmark. He can play the ball with his right foot. He can play the ball with his left foot. But our coach was like, no, we don't. Omar, I see you showing the goalkeepers to show at a better angle. I don't want that. I don't want that. I want him to put the ball up the field. He can get creative when he has the ball at his feet, find good channels to put the ball in. But for us to create more pressure for ourselves, I don't want that. And it's like, I come from the idea and the system of like,
is that just because of a lack of quality in the back line? And I'm not being disrespectful or derogatory towards those players, but just because of
the strengths. It's the strengths of the
team.
And I think that's where, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, different philosophies, different coaching methods. And like, sometimes I'm sure with your, like you said, you look for players who are probably a little bit more advanced with their feet, so that transition for you is not as difficult, because you're not that you have like a model that you're looking for, but it's like, you don't want to set these kids up for failure. You want to put them in a situation. That's why the recruiting aspect of everything, even in college for probably Akron or something like that, is like, okay, he's not good with his feet. Sorry, we can't take you because of the system we're trying to play, and we don't have enough time to actually ingrain the style of play into you.
Isn't Akron just a youth MLS academy? Isn't that all Akron?
They had a rough year this year, so
they
had a rough year this year. But I think that's what it comes down to, too. I think that's where, like, the personality of the coach, if you're a go-getter and you're somebody who loves to recruit or go out there and get the players that you need, that are going to fit your system. That's why it doesn't take, if you see it at UCLA this year, after the coach was there for 1 year, it's going to take him some time to get the players that he wants. You can't ask for those players that don't know your system to come in and you step in and have them play for you with, like, you know, like Joe Hart and Man City. He's not going to play for
you. You mean
Pep
Minnesota
Guardiola.
United's Joe Hart? That's apparently the rumor that's going on right now.
So it's tough, and I think that's where it comes down to making sure that as a goalkeeper, to kind of like bring things full circle, is as a goalkeeper, you need to be able to, even if your team does not play with their feet, get good with your feet, because you want to be able to be put into every situation possible. You go to the MLS draft, like Luis Barraza, the guy from you have him at New York City.
Yeah, that guy's ridiculous with his feet, right?
Unreal, unreal. Yeah. So you have those kind of guys. That's why they recruited him. You're like, okay, this guy's going to easily step in, and you can easily see him. We don't have to teach him anything. He knows what he's doing. We can fine tune, refine things like that. But it shows the younger kids that you have, like, look, this is what you're going to be required of you. Get it done now. It's going to be a chore at the beginning, but get your touch, get everything right, so that when you step into that environment, seamless, easy to go.
Are your olders training with the first team?
No. We've had that in the past. We've had some injuries right now to some goalkeepers, but when it makes sense, we've had the opportunity for goalkeepers to train with the first team and when there was a need. Sean Johnson being with the national team has created a need for certain camps. So that's been cool for certain goalkeepers to get in there. But it's not like a rolling, revolving door of goalkeepers going into the first team training. If they earn it, if they deserve it, then I coordinate with Rob Bartusian, the first team goalkeeper coach, and we try to make that happen when it makes sense.
I thought it was just the nines and tens were just going up to the first team and just getting service, guys, service to these guys. Let's talk about service, though. Let's talk about service. And we were talking about with Jeremy about that. Working with the youngers group, and you said, you know, you've got somebody who's going to be coming in, stepping in, helping out with the youngers. Service at the younger ages is difficult, even at the academy level. This is so important with your guys' system of play, service. So what do you do about this? Are the kids doing most of the service, and you're really, really refining that service before they're actually going into the goalkeeper sessions, or are you trying to for lack of a better term, correct at the session themselves, or stopping the session and changing up the variables in order to make it simpler for them? Because what you guys do is not easy without very, very good service consistent over and over again.
Sure. One of the benefits for the youngest age groups in our academy is that they play a ton of soccer. They're constantly playing, whether it's a lot of them get there 30 minutes before the training sessions and they're just playing pickup. You know, the coaches are there, but and the goalkeepers are playing on the field. The goalkeepers are playing in goal. Field players are in the goal. I mean, they're just playing a ton. And the game, as we all know, is the best teacher. And from that standpoint, their service has gotten better as goalkeepers because they're just around the ball more. And I'm thankful that the coaches at the youth levels within our academy are doing that. They serve. I try to have them serve as much as possible. It takes a ton of patience on my end, and I've gotten much better about it because it's not going to be perfect. It is still tough of, like, how much pace, the accuracy. But to their credit, these kids have done remarkably well with the service, and I try to keep it fairly basic. You know, I'm not asking them to ping balls 30 yards to from across. You know, if we're doing crosses, I'll usually do a lot of the service. But from
you don't have 8-9-year-olds end box to end box.
Not yet. Maybe one day. But the guys – I've impressed upon them early on in my tenure there that service is important, that you get what you give, and that you want the same service that you're going to give somebody else, and that we're working together. I think sometimes for young kids there's an attitude about it that, like, if I give him bad service or if I, like, hit it really hard and make him look bad, then I look better. And I've had to tweak that a little bit and say, like, look, we're all trying to be successful. We're all trying to get the same place, and we need to help each other. And fostering that environment to make it more collaborative, I think, has helped their brains function mechanically so that they can hit better service.
So you've literally had that maturity issue where people have been like, oh, dude, if I make this dude look bad, like, I'm going to look better in the future.
I think it happens at all levels. And it's not something that, like, I had to deal with explicitly, but I kind of see it sometimes. And it's like there's a fine line there, even at the highest levels when you're, you know, I've been in environments at the pro level where, like, there's a little bit of animosity there. And that's a different beast, but it still exists for kids. You know, they're competitive, and especially in a cauldron environment like what we have. And what we want to do is we want to foster competitiveness, but also a level of respect for each other.
How many guys keep on each roster? Three?
For the youth teams?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I want to say, like, somewhere low 20s.
Okay.
I think it's more for the younger kids. Like the U12s and U13s have a couple more, but it's right around 20, I would say.
Okay.
Per team.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's a pretty competitive environment right there. You know, especially when you think about, I mean, how big is the metro area? It's, my gosh, it must be.
I mean,
unreal.
How many people, like a few million people in the New York City metro area. And that's not including New Jersey or upstate New York, Westchester County, Connecticut, where some of our kids are coming from. So there's a lot of human beings there that want to play soccer. trying to pick them and get the right ones in is a challenge.
So what advice do you give, like, aspiring NYCFC Academy goalkeepers? And, you know, I know this is a very loaded question, you know, because you're like, well, I mean, I can't tell you specifically what it's going to take for you to make a team at NYCFC. But, you know, you talked about, you know, persistence, and you talked about, you know, having a short memory and being able to deal with those situations, and obviously, you know, the athletic characteristics are going to be important too. But what advice do you give these kids, you know, if they're going into a trial? Let's just not even say at NYCFC, but at any elite academy, what are like three main things they should focus on?
The biggest thing, and it may seem counterintuitive for anybody watching, listening, is falling in love with being a goalkeeper. It's a tough position. It's unique in its skill set. It's unique in its mental demands on a player. And it's not to say it's any harder or easier than being a field player. I think that's what we run into. But goalkeeping is unique. And if you don't love the position, you're not going to work hard at it. You're not going to look to develop, you know, your athleticism, your technical and tactical understanding. And when you get into the idea of an academy, it becomes almost like a job for, you know, when you think about the time commitment, the physical demands, the travel, all of it, if you're not in love with it, it's not going to shine through. So if we're looking at you as a goalkeeper and it doesn't seem like you really enjoy being a goalkeeper, there's no way you're going to enjoy it when you're driving an hour one way through traffic just to make training and then do homework and then do it again the next day. And, you know, like, all while still being a kid, and being a good son, being a good friend, a good, you know, student. there's no chance. So I think that more than anything, not build up, not jumping higher. Like, yes, of course, these things have a place and they're important. But if you're not in love with being a goalkeeper, it's going to be really difficult for you to be within an academy system at the highest level. It doesn't make sense.
No, I mean, it makes complete sense. And it's so simple. And I think a lot of kids are going to listen to that and be like, it's not what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear, like, I had to handle crosses better, or I needed to, my distribution need to be better with my left foot or something. No, that's my impression of kids, by the way. They all talk like that. They all sound like that.
But I think that's the, like, the philosophical route. And I think that's where people go, oh, wow, okay. Well, the way I interpreted that when you said it, it was like, okay, if I'm a kid that really loves goalkeeping and I love, like, just the grind of it and watching film, watching professional goalkeepers go at it and do their thing, me hearing that as a kid, I go, okay, well, all the crossing, all the distribution, all that stuff's going to come into play if I love it. And if you love getting better at distribution, or you love just goalkeeping in general, you see what the next level provides and what it brings, and you're going to be the one who has that incentive and that initiative to get better at those things. And I think, like you said, it's finding the people that love it and truly, really, like, want to get to the next level. And then from there, those are going to be the ones where, hey, I'm not going to see you this week. You don't have to say, I want you to do this. They're going to go, all right, coach, what do you want me to do? Okay, you want me to distribution? I'm going to do some crossing? All right, perfect. So I think that's, like, the cool thing about what you just said, is that a lot of kids, they need to be the ones to take the initiative. And if they don't, maybe there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. But I think as coaches as well, it's like letting them know that, you know, take the initiative, make sure you want to get better, so that if I'm not there, you can either coach the session because you know everything that I've said, or at the same time, too, you're going to want to know how to coach the session so that...
You just did it perfect, dude. I just want my kids to just coach my sessions. We just do that. Just like, it's like, I want to make sure you understand everything so you can just do this, and I can just stand there.
That's a huge point in how you started the podcast when you're talking about like managing the goalkeepers that are off the field while you're finishing one session.
Yeah.
I think you hit the nail right on the head, Omar, is that, like, the independent learners, the ones who are in love with the position, the ones that are going to work the hardest and they're going to want to do everything goalkeeping.
For sure.
And become students of that. And to me, that I could sit here and say, like, okay, like, you have to really work hard on your weak foot and then you'll be in the academy. And that's a lie. You know, like, if you're not, like, yeah, that's part of it, but that's not it. I found the technical and the tactical side, you can add on once they get into the system. But if they don't have that love, they don't have that presence, that, and they don't have basic athleticism, then it's really, really difficult to add on to that. I think that's such a good point, and I thought that was really good, like, translation of what
you,
I'm saying.
I built off of you.
So I appreciate it.
I know we're running long here, and we're going to finish up in a second here before we have our next person sitting there on their cell phone, you know, waiting. No one's there yet. No one's just there yet. She's got a lot going on. She's in the draft tomorrow, so I'm sure she's
very cool.
She's very focused on you know, I don't know, continuing her career rather than be on a podcast bunch of jackasses. But
being on the podcast is continuing your career.
Exactly. Absolutely. Being on the podcast is continuing a career of a sort. This is what happens, guys, when you finish your playing career. This is your future, goalkeepers. I noticed you didn't bring up height, because that's something that a lot of parents come up to me and say consistently. They say, I heard there's an MLS height requirement. And I know that's not a real thing, but where did this fabrication or this legend come of that MLS academies have a height requirement? You know,
it's a great question. I have no idea. We don't. I'd be lying if I said it doesn't matter. It does. But you can do all the tests in the world and get an idea of, like, how tall this 10-year-old is going to be, but you don't know until they go through it and they grow. To me, like, if they have that mental aspect, they have all the things that we're talking about, and they're quote unquote undersized, I would still take that kid, because you just don't know. And it makes it easier to work with kids that have that mental capability, because they can then skyrocket in other areas because of that. So the size is important. Don't get me wrong. It's something that I wanted to bring up in the presentation, because I know there's a lot of concern, or at least interest, about it. But
I've straight up had parents tell me, I don't know if we should continue with the sessions because he seems to really enjoy it, but I don't think he's going to be tall enough to play professionally. Like, they've literally said that to me. Yeah. And it's really sad when I hear that from a parent of, like, a 10 or 11-year-old who's got a lot of potential and is very good and really enjoys it and stuff like that. You know?
If they enjoy it, then let them play. That's my advice. But ultimately, like, if that to me is what should shine through. If the kid likes it, if he's 3 feet tall or 8 feet tall, like, if he loves it, then let him play, you know, and let him enjoy it. But
I mean, you really have no idea. I mean, dude, I'm not joking. You, Omar was like 6 feet tall, like 12
years. Yeah, again, every podcast. Yeah, I grew a lot faster than everybody, and then I think that it goes both ways. I think if you go really fast, or you're a tall goalkeeper, sometimes you kind of neglect some of the little things because you're so tall, you can get away with a lot more stuff. And then as a shorter goalkeeper, you don't take that for granted, and you're like told, hey, you're not going to make it. And like you said, the independent learners, those are the ones that go, okay, I'm small, I'm aware of that. Okay, how can I use my best attributes to make myself better? And I think that's where I saw in the shorter goalkeepers. I mean, I was taller, but as I got older, I became the shorter goalkeeper in the sense in the group. And people were like, oh, like your field awareness or your understanding of certain, you know, functions of like being a sweeper keeper are like much higher than other people. I'm like, well, when I was younger, I was slower. So I realized that and I said, okay, if I'm not going to be fast off my line, the other teams are, you know, scheming and game planning balls over the top because I can't come off my line fast enough. How can I advance my position a little bit more? And that's, we're talking to Jeremy, it's like, because you guys play a certain system of, you know, high press, we as goalkeepers have to press.
Careful, don't
give
NYCFC their
that's no secret. That's well known.
But yeah, then you see stuff like that, and then I think that's the cool thing about getting these goalkeepers in that group setting where now you want to see what their, you know, personality is like when they're under pressure in the competition. You know, when they're a shorter goalkeeper, what can they pick off the taller goalkeeper? And a taller goalkeeper, what can I see from a shorter goalkeeper, and why does that work for them? I think that's the beauty of, like, for us when I was the Galaxy is I was under 16. We had the 18s, three goalkeepers. So we had all of us working together, and the other goalkeepers were like, hey, Omar, you know, I'm 6'6". This is what works for me. Your hand positioning may be a little bit better if you put it a little bit lower.
Sure.
And your posture might change just because, you know, you're not as tall as us. So you start picking up these little ideas, and I think that's the important thing is the evolution as a goalkeeper. What us as coaches now, I mean, I've been doing it for 3-4 years now, goalkeeping coaching, like for that. Like from the year one to where I am now, I have way different priorities than when I was first-time coach. But it's because, like, you get better, you learn, and I think – for coaches or for young players who may be a little bit shorter, it's like you're going to grow and learn the game as well. So don't count yourself out early. Let other people decide that for you. Don't decide it for yourself.
I mean, I try to be – I'm pretty self-deprecating on the show usually, I know. But for younger goalkeepers out there who are smaller on the same side, I didn't let that be my number one factor. I didn't let that be the factor on why somebody didn't choose me for selection.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, don't let that be the reason that people don't choose you for selection, you know. Make it another reason. Make it the fact that I'm not very good with my right foot. Make it that. We should make it that. But I did want to bring this up, Omar, with you, because you brought up a really good point, and I know we're going to run long here, but I think this is really important, is that do you feel that if you had not grown so quickly – it would have benefited you as a goalkeeper because you wouldn't have been able to rely on just your natural length and all that sort of things?
No, I think, again, it comes back to the personality. I wasn't like the most aggressive when I was younger. So even though I was taller, I wasn't somebody like to come out for crosses because I was afraid of that. So even sometimes you see tangible qualities about somebody, their height, their reach or whatever. Sometimes you don't know how to use it. You know, and I think that's the importance of having a coach is like, hey, these are the attributes that you have that are different and specific to other people compared to other people. How can I bring the best out of you? I think that's why you and Jeremy, you guys are doing so well with your academy is that like you guys have the ability to look at every goalkeeper as an individual piece, see their best attributes and go, okay, you know, this might not be the session for you, but let's try and figure it out. And like based on your attributes, how can we get the best for you and get your ceiling and reach your ceiling from there? I think that's the beauty of working with the youth. Like I said earlier, is like being able to dissect every piece of the technique to down to the basics so that you have the ability to teach it and like construct it in their head to have it make sense for them, and then again make the best out of their situation based on their height, based on whatever confidence issues they may have, their starting points or whatever. So I think that's rambling, but
no,
that's
I think
really good.
That's great. I mean, honestly, but it, you know, that's the end of the episode, like when we start rambling and start going like, you're like, oh, I think we've covered everything. I don't know what else we can talk about here.
That's when the violins start playing.
Yeah. That's awesome. Straight up. We should have that. We should have, or somebody pulls out a light.
Should have it just set for just like give 60 us a light. Minutes and yeah. It starts playing through the
We just should just start getting a light here.
The clock says 30 seconds, but I'm going to go over.
So, Danny, if anybody wants to reach out to you, we were talking to Jeremy about this as well too. It must be nice to not have that NCAA restriction where you know you're not, you know, you can't text at 4 o'clock and you can only do it between 12 and 1, and then it's got to be, you know, only emojis or whatever. The thing is, where's the best place for people to reach out to you if they have
my email? It's just danny.sapero@nycfc.com.
Okay,
that's the easiest way to get a hold of me. So. Questions, any way I can help, I'm happy to do that.
Dude, that's awesome, man. As you all know, for Omar, it's @ProGK Academy _. and on YouTube. The YouTube channel's killing it, by the way, dude.
It's going well, yeah. It's just continuity. Awesome.
I gotta check it out.
Yeah. Oh, you should, yeah. It's just sessions. I have the USL guys come through.
Cool.
And we just train, and it's been good. I think that's the beauty of that, too, because even like...
And it's showcasing the USL guys, too, which is great.
It is, yeah. But even like that, like when I do coaching with those guys, there's different priorities that need to be set for them. So, like, for example, I just know that, you know, they haven't trained, let's say, for a month because they're in off season, and I know their technical foundation is really good, but because they haven't trained for a month, their hand-eye coordination is off. So sometimes as a coach, you feel like this ego and this pride to be like, okay, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. But then I'm also like, from a logical and rational perspective, I've been there before where I haven't played for a month, and sometimes my technique may be off. So I didn't want to, I tried this time around not to overcoach, because when you start overcoaching, then you get it into their heads that they need to change certain technique versus 3-4 sessions in, you go, ah, there that's the guy. There's the guy. So I think that's like the cool thing about the sessions that I've been doing as a coach for me. Like, I love posting them and giving people ideas, but like for myself, it's just like, okay, at the next level, it's like not a, you said once I'm glorified babysitter, but it's like the service has to be very good. But at the same time too, it's just those minimal coaching points. But when you have those coaching points, making sure that you're not nagging them, it's more of like, hey, this is what I saw. Let's check out the footage. This is what's going to help me, my backing of like what I'm telling you. Watch the footage. You tell me what you saw there. Then they give you the feedback, and they go, oh, you know what? I didn't think I was going to go with two hands there, but I should probably go next time. And then the next session they get in there, they go, okay, I'm gonna implement like those little pieces of feedback.
Yeah. So if you want to see our next episode, which is Omar discussing what he looks for in a goalkeeper on his YouTube video, I felt like we were gonna start going into another episode. So I was like, oh boy, I don't want to cut off Omar right now here, but Tristan's already over there.
These are the height requirements
so
for
Tristan,
my
Tristan, why don't you start warming up? Just get some laps in. So stretch. Okay, cool. Just volleys, and some just. Distribution on the ground. Okay, cool. Sweet. I'm just going to do that from now on whenever people are waiting.
It's good. It plays.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's all the time on Inside the 18. Remember, contact at InsideThe18Media.com. If you have a guest suggestion or a topic suggestion, you can reach out to us at Goalkeeper Podcast on all social media platforms. We're out. Later.
See you guys.
Bye.